I made some works on Dora. I revisited it with my son, but could not bear the sight anymore. Nordhausen was for 80% destroyed by the Allies. That war still carves deep into the hidden collective psyche. One way people are using to overcome the burden is to trying to forget. But I think conscious being never can forget. So walking there, I still have the house, currently negotiating the accommodation of a Syrian fugitive family there, is difficult, as the local people, as you rightly observed, covered their history deep, deep in the crowns and in their minds. It is sometimes a rather depressing place to be, especially when wandering in its past.
È una nuova droga dagli effetti tremendi e si insinua tra gli adolescenti. Allarme da una ricerca della ASL.
Allora, signore Guidi, lei così fedele al suo detersivo, perché ha cambiato per...
Multitox.
È stata mia cognata a convincermi.
Adesso noi passiamo invece a raccontarvi una storia brutta, perché è una storia di droga. C'è una nuova droga che si è affacciata sul territorio piemontese, si chiama...
Multitox.
Sì, eravamo stanchi della musica pop. E grazie a Multitox adesso abbiamo quattro bustini pieni di rumori. Free jazz. Elettroacustica. Breakcore. DIY elettronica. Video art, performance e mescolanze estreme. Proprio quello che ci voleva per quella stronza di mia cognata.
20 ottobre si inizia alla cavallerisa. 21 ottobre festa all'asilo occupato. 22 doppio appuntamento, mattinata al mercato del balloon. E serata indiavolata al passo. 23 ottobre grande serata conclusiva alla Blackout House.
Multitox.
Dal 20 al 23 di ottobre, 5 locaciones. De cine di artisti da tutto il mondo. Un caleidoscopio di musiche impossibili. Benefit, Radio Blackout.
Attenzione, concerti a live di volumi, portate i tappi per le orecchie. E ricorda, esporre il tuo cane allo stress acustico è pericoloso per te e per lui. Lascialo a casa.
Ooh, I haven't used one of these since our Black Ops night raid on Kinshasa.
Who's Kinshasa?
Comedy on BBC Radio 4 with House on Fire. Tonight at 11 o'clock.
Well, now Russia, the Wild East. Martin Sixsmith continues his history of a thousand years of Russia. Leonid Brezhnev has toppled Nikita Khrushchev to take the reins of the Soviet Union. Years of stagnation are about to begin.
Nikita Khrushchev is buried here in Moscow's Novodevichy Cemetery. He's surrounded by some of the great names of Russian culture: Chekhov, Gogol, Mayakovsky, Prokofiev and Shostakovich. But the cultural legacy of the Khrushchev era is a mixed one. Periods of freedom were punctuated by crackdowns. The publication of Alexander Solzhenitsyn's One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich in 1962, depicting the daily grind of the Stalin-era camps, was personally approved by Khrushchev. But Solzhenitsyn was soon banned again. At an exhibition of modern art, Khrushchev exploded in fury. "This is dog shit," he told the artists, "and you're all faggots and perverts. My grandson can paint better than you." When the sculptor Ernst Niezvesny replied that being general secretary doesn't make you an art expert, Khrushchev launched into a 15-minute rant, And Alexander Shelyapin, the head of the KGB, whispered, "You'll rot in a camp." But Neizvestny never went to jail. Khrushchev respected him for daring to speak out. And before his death in 1971, he told his wife that Neizvestny should carve his tombstone. The result, in front of me here, is a bust of Khrushchev with a background that's split down the middle between black and white stone. Quite fitting for a man of so many contradictions. Малая земля, кровавая заря, яростный десант, сердец летает вверх. Леонид Брежнев had led the coup that deposed Khrushchev in 1964. He'd been Khrushchev's protege. They'd served together during the war, and Khrushchev had overseen the younger man's rise through the party ranks. But having evicted his mentor, Brezhnev set about undoing his reforms and returning the country to the conservatism of the past. The Brezhnev years would become known as the era of stagnation, when change was regarded with suspicion, and the USSR began the inexorable decline that would end in collapse a quarter of a century later. With literature and art now rigidly censored, writers who refused to produce the monochrome pap of socialist realism were forced underground. Samizdat blossomed, with poems and novels passed from hand to hand in laboriously typed carbon copies. But speaking freely was a risky business. The authors Andrei Sinyavsky and Yuli Daniel were convicted of anti-Soviet propaganda based on views expressed by characters in their works of fiction. Their trial did much to create a dissident movement in the Soviet Union. When I spoke to Sinyavsky in 1989, he told me that the real nature of their crime had been to expose the fragility and illegitimacy of the Soviet system.
The regime needed enemies and monsters to serve as scapegoats for its own failings. Even works of creative imagination were targets for the oppression of the state. Russia has always needed poets and writers willing to stand in the way of autocracy.
The trial of Sinyavsky and Daniel caused an international outcry and focused Soviet dissidents on the struggle for human rights. But police dispersed the demonstrators and infiltrated informers into the dissident groups. Writers and academics found themselves dismissed from their positions and forced to take menial jobs as cleaners or cloakroom attendants.
The Soviet Union announced this morning that its troops had been called into Czechoslovakia at the urgent request of Czechoslovak leaders. Party and government leaders.
The repression got worse after the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia. Alexander Dubček's separate road to socialism had granted Czechs increased freedoms and the hope of a multi-party system. The Prague Spring of 1968 threatened communist rule in Eastern Europe, and Brezhnev decided to act.
Prague has woken up under foreign occupation. The night was one of terror.
On the 21st of August, 200,000 Warsaw Pact troops advanced across the Czech border. 70 civilians were killed as they tried to resist. But the scale of the fighting was less than in Hungary 12 years earlier, and the Kremlin quickly announced that order had been restored. Dubček was flown to Moscow in handcuffs, but unlike the Hungarian rebels, he was not executed. Washington condemned the crushing of Czech democracy, but did not break off relations with Moscow.
Mr. Brezhnev, it is a very great honor for me to welcome you on your first visit to the United States.
Richard Nixon was effusive when Brezhnev visited New York in 1973. Agreements were signed to limit the production and deployment of nuclear weapons, and the tensions of the Cold War began to ease. The Kremlin's chief motivation was undoubtedly financial. Brezhnev's stifling conservatism had plunged the USSR into crisis. Improvements in industry were put off or avoided completely. Workers refused to increase productivity, as it meant the state would give them extra work the following year. People channeled their energy into the black economy, boosting their incomes by moonlighting, bartering services and goods. The whole economy needed a radical overhaul, but Brezhnev stalled and prevaricated. even the magnificent achievements of the Soviet space program were frittered away. To the west of Cosmonauts Alley, here in northern Moscow, is a leafy square dedicated to cosmonaut Vladimir Komarov, and if anyone deserved it, he did. In the late 1960s, the Soviet Union was desperate to beat the Americans to the moon, and the first step was to launch a new series of powerful rockets known as Soyuz. President Brezhnev decreed that Soyuz 1 must blast off on May Day 1967. The engineers warned him that the rocket wasn't ready, and Yuri Gagarin produced a list of 203 separate faults in its operating systems. But the KGB confiscated the document and ordered the flight to go ahead. Komarov was selected as the pilot, and pre-launch footage shows him looking deeply troubled. Soon after going into orbit, mechanical failures set warning lights flashing, and Komarov radioed that nothing works on this devil ship. With Soyuz plummeting back to Earth, Prime Minister Kosygin spoke to Komarov and called him a hero. His wife was allowed to talk to him in a final, tearful conversation. As he smashed into the Russian steppe at 400 miles an hour, Komarov's last words were an indictment of the Soviet system that had sent him to his death. «Вы меня убили», he said. «You've killed me». The leadership's focus on propaganda victories at the expense of long-term development had undone all the scientific brilliance and all the individual heroism. In 1969, the Americans put the first men on the moon. No Soviet cosmonaut would follow in their footsteps. By the end of the 1960s, nationalist discontent was increasing in the Soviet republics. There were disturbances in Armenia, Estonia, and Ukraine. But Brezhnev allowed the problem to fester. The fault lines that would eventually tear the Soviet Union apart were beginning to open. But Brezhnev's response was to look for scapegoats. I remember this little park in the shadow of the lowering Gothic Foreign Ministry building from the 1980s. I used to come here to cover demonstrations by dissident refusenik Soviet citizens, mainly Jews, who'd been refused permission to emigrate. It was embarrassing, really, for the Soviet Union that hundreds of thousands of people wanted to leave a place that had declared itself a socialist paradise. So exit visas were very rarely issued, and the people who wanted to emigrate, the Jews, were dubbed as dangerous Zionists, a threat to the Soviet state. Refuseniks and dissidents alike were accused of being agents of Western imperialism. Andrei Sakharov and Alexander Solzhenitsyn were hounded relentlessly. In 1973, Solzhenitsyn wrote his open letter to the Soviet authorities, urging Brezhnev and his colleagues to
throw away the dead ideology that threatens to ruin us. When you open your newspaper or switch on your television, do you yourselves really believe all those speeches you find there? You all stopped believing in it long ago, and if you did not, then you are totally cut off from the real life of this country.
Alexander Solzhenitsyn was detained at the end of a dank and gloomy winter afternoon, much like the atmosphere of his own stories. Seven police agents, including two uniformed militiamen, pushed their way into the flat in central Moscow where his second...
When Solzhenitsyn was banished to the West in 1974, Andrei Sakharov took up the baton. Sakharov was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, and when the West initialed the Helsinki Accords in 1975, it insisted on an undertaking that all signatories should respect human rights and fundamental freedoms. Sakharov founded the Moscow-Helsinki Group to hold the Soviet state to its promises. His reward was 6 years internal exile in the closed city of Gorky.
50,000 heavily armed Soviet troops have crossed the border and are now dispersed throughout Afghanistan, attempting to conquer...
When Soviet troops invaded Afghanistan in December 1979, Moscow embarked on a troubled occupation that would be a millstone round its neck for nearly 10 years. Détente with the West juddered to a halt. The superpower arms race resumed, and the Kremlin once more sacrificed the civilian economy to match spiralling US military spending.
In 1980, rises in the price of food sent dock workers in the Polish port of Gdańsk onto the streets. Led by Lech Wałęsa, an inspirational mustachioed shipyard electrician, the Solidarity Union turned the rebellion into a nationwide struggle for liberty and national dignity. Brezhnev considered military invasion, but instead prevailed on the Polish president, General Wojciech Jaruzelski, to enforce a state of emergency. Thousands of people were sent to jail, and 100 or more shot dead on the streets. The people's grievances were suppressed, but would explode again at the end of the decade.
На протяжении почти 4 лет не умолкали грохот сражений.
Леонид Брежнев was in physical decline now. He'd grown fat and appeared confused during public appearances, slurring his speech and forgetting his lines. He was a physical incarnation of the invalid system he ruled over. For the last weeks of his reign, Brezhnev was thought to be in a coma. When he died in 1982, the Sun newspaper ran the headline, "Revealed, Red Cabbage Ruled Russia."
It's been officially announced in Moscow that Mr. Yuri Andropov, the former head of the KGB, has been elected as General Secretary of the Soviet Communist Party in succession to President Brezhnev. The decision was taken at the session...
The new president was also old and sick. Yuri Andropov made a brief effort to end corruption and mismanagement, but his reforms were window dressing, and 15 months later, he too was dead. His successor was himself so ill that he could barely deliver the eulogy at Andropov's funeral. When Konstantin Chernenko expired the following year, Ronald Reagan lamented, "How am I supposed to get any place with these Russians if they keep dying on me?" Washington was still helping Islamic guerrillas massacre Soviet troops in Afghanistan, and Reagan had pressed ahead with his controversial Star Wars missile shield, designed to defend the USA while leaving the Soviets vulnerable to an American nuclear strike. The Kremlin could ill afford another arms race, but such was the fear of being left behind that both Andropov and Chernenko had agreed to increase spending. The next Soviet leader would inherit problems so weighty that they would put the country's very survival in doubt.
Russia, the Wild East, was written and presented by Martin Sixsmith, and the programme returns at the same time tomorrow. The series is produced by Anna Scott-Brown and is a Ladbroke Radio production for BBC Radio 4. Well, the news is next, and then Mariella Frostrup and the final part of her History of Women's Writing. Open book in a couple of minutes.
44 years on BBC Radio 4. And just a minute could be in for some changes.
I'd like to introduce a new thing, that if you talk for a minute without being interrupted, you get a cake as well. Yes. That's very nice of you.
Yeah. Yeah. You think you deserve more than one extra pill? One extra...
Presents for panellists and points for Parsons.
Hormone's just in the lead, 1 point ahead of Graham Norton, who's 1 point ahead of Sheila Hancock, who's 3 points ahead of Tony Hawks, and Nicholas Parsons has got 1 point.
Just a minute. Back on Monday evening at 6:30.
You can do. She's standing quiet on Saturday night.
Thank you. Der Brunnen geht. Vor vielen Millionen Jahren haben die Brunnen gegeben der Menschheit zum entscheidenden Sieg über die Insektenzivilisation verholfen. Die zeitlose Prophetin hat vorhergesagt, dass ich die göttliche Ordnung in der Liga der 20.000 Planeten zerstören werde. Eines Tages wird dies geschehen. Aber nicht heute. Denn heute ist der Tag, an dem ich sterbe. Der Tag, an dem unsere Geschichte beginnt.
Metall auf Eis, Metall auf Eis. Finger fertig.
Wir haben nur eine einzige Chance. Wir müssen die Kommandobrücke seines Schatzes treffen. Viel Glück. Wenn wir es nicht schaffen, dann sind wir alle verloren.
Thank you.
Raum wie unser Universum. Am selben Ort, zur selben Zeit. Die Dark Zone kennt keine Regeln, hat keinen Sinn und keine Ruhe. Ja, wir haben unserem göttlichen Schatten für seine unendliche und konstante Wachsamkeit zu danken. Er schützt unser Universum, das Licht und der Ordnung vor den Schrecken der Unordnung der Dark Zone. Ehre sei seinem Schatten. Dann möge er der
Wiederbelebungssequenz aktivieren.